Hi everyone, I'm Maxime, the French guy from GCN, and I'm crossing Europe for the Transcontinental Race. So welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, as the men's Tour de France comes to an end and the Transcontinental Race reaches its climax, we ask which is really the ultimate test for cycling and whether the Transcontinental is closer to the true spirit of Le Tour.
Plus, fired for wearing cycling shorts, legal e-bikes getting destroyed, and a simple product which could render drop bar mountain bikes and overbuilt gravel bikes a thing of the past. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Tadej Pogačar is a cycling god. He claimed his fifth Tour de France.
Can we say record equaling? Fifth?
Technically, we can say that, Si, yes. A fifth Tour de France win without ever looking even remotely troubled.
Yeah, it was, as predicted, the fastest tour in history. He finished with an average speed of 43.326 kilometres per hour, half a k an hour faster than the previous fastest, which was last year's, and actually 4k an hour faster than the legendarily tough 2010 tour.
I just thought you were going to say 2010, yeah. There's been a lot of tech developments over those 16 years.
I'm sure that's what it is, Dan.
We also learnt that Pogačar did indeed smash Marco Pantani's infamous record up Alpe d'Huez by over a minute with the greatest climbing performance ever seen.
Yeah, we also learned that Max, our French colleague you've just seen introducing this episode, is now 2,900 kilometres into the Transcontinental Race and averaging 384 kilometres per day.
Wow. He is currently, as we film this, in 42nd place. Race leader Robin Gemperli is cranking out 470k per day and is now just a couple of days away from the finish, which is in Kalamata in Greece.
Yeah, bonkers, all of them. Yeah. And I also learned this week that a simple new product from the maestros of machining at 5Dev might have just solved the gravel bike versus mountain bike conundrum with their Shredville extensions.
Nice. They fit onto a standard flat mountain bike bar, but allow you to fit road levers, giving you both a normal mountain bike position and an aero road-inspired position.
Do you know what, Dan? I saw this and it blew my mind.
I saw when you saw it and it blew your mind.
Well, because I think I texted everyone. Genius level from 5Dev. I would like to try some of those very much.
I'm no doubt you will very soon, Si. We also learned last week that Wout van Aert now has his own mobile phone carrier over in Belgium.
This has blown my mind too. Apparently it's amongst the best in the world, so long as it doesn't crash.
I see what you did there, Si. Very good, very
good.
Yeah,
thanks.
Now, since the Tour de France has just finished, as Si mentioned in the intro, whilst the Transcontinental is in full swing, it did get us thinking about the comparison between those two events.
Yeah, and whether or not the Transcontinental is filling the vacuum that the old Tour de France left behind.
You might have to bear with us here. So this year's Tour de France was amongst the shortest on record for a three-week race. Only three editions of the Tour were shorter, somewhere between 6 and 11 stages back in the early days of 1903, 04 and 05. And the other one that was shorter was 1990, and that was just by 17 kilometres.
That one was mainly because there were three individual time trials and one team time trial. So basically, a fifth of the stages were
yeah,
time trials.
Which seems really bonkers now, doesn't it, given how little time trialling there is in the modern era. Anyway, the point we're making is that the race is generally getting shorter. And actually, because this year's event was the fastest ever, as Si pointed out, by duration, this year's was the shortest ever.
Yeah, Tadej Pogačar took just under 74 hours to complete the race. No previous winner has ever done so in under 75 hours. And for a bit of context, in the Armstrong era, he sometimes took over 90 hours. Wow. And actually, we should say in the Dan Lloyd era, which was that 2010 Tour de France, in case you're wondering, it took 96 hours for Dan to finish.
Which means 92 hours for the winner. Still a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
I basically had to ride the whole extra stage.
Basically, you did, year. Yeah.
And a whole extra day compared to Tadej Pogačar now.
Yeah.
Anyway, by contrast, many transcontinental riders have ridden for that duration in just 4 days. Not over 21 days or 23, as the Tour de France is. The clock never stops ticking, obviously, at that event, but the best riders are generally on their bikes for between 18 and a half to 20 and a half hours a day.
Yeah, and the daily distances will blow your minds. Around 450 kilometres for the best, often over really tough terrain. That's around three times the length of an average stage of this year's Tour de France.
What is the point in comparing, I hear you all ask? I mean, it's like comparing apples with oranges. Well, perhaps what we're thinking is that the Transcontinental is what the Tour de France was.
Exactly. A little bit like gravel bikes filling the void that mountain bikes left behind.
How so?
Well, as everyone knows, because we've said it a million times before, we come from a mountain bike background, Dan. But mountain biking, when we were doing it for a living, is very different to what it is now, right? Mountain biking has developed into a different sport, in large part because the equipment changed a lot, allowing bikes and therefore riders to take on completely different terrain to what we would have considered to tackle.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Whereas we use gravel bikes now on very similar terrain to what we rode mountain bikes on in the 90s.
Yes, easy terrain.
That's the one.
Basically.
Anyway, so if it has filled the void, what does that even mean? Well, as we've also said many times, the Tour de France is no longer the ultimate test of human endurance. Human performance, yes, but not endurance. Whereas the Transcontinental, we would say, is the latter.
Yeah, and more importantly, our following of the Transcontinental as the general public is actually similar to the bygone era of the Tour de France. Back then, you'd have reports in newspapers, but no live coverage, right. Of course. Now we have live coverage of every kilometre of the Tour de France, but we follow the Transcontinental by looking at dots on a map.
I don't know how to break this to you, Si, but I don't think the general public were dot-watching the Tour de France in the early 1900s.
No, but you know what I mean, right? Like, without the live coverage, you were reading about what's happening, as we do
reading make-believe stories.
Well, right? I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, that's why it was so good, right?
Yeah, he could say what he wanted.
Yeah, and the real stories of the event only come out after it's happened. Mm. I mean, a little bit on social media now, maybe, but during it, really, we just admire the feats of these riders or dots on a map. We can just be in awe of them, basically. I mean, do you think the Tour de France is now missing out on something, now that it's not the ultimate test of human endurance?
I don't think so, personally, no. In fact, if it stayed as it was, I think it would be suffering as an event, the Tour de France. Hardly anyone's got the time to follow the whole thing, even in its current format, let alone if the stage was still 8 hours or longer.
Oh, Dan, but you don't need to follow every kilometre. This is what annoys me annually at Milan and San Remo, because everyone's like, oh, it's such a boring race. First 6 hours, nothing happens. That's the point. You don't watch the first 6 hours. You watch the last half an hour, which is the best half an hour of cycling of the year, except perhaps the final stage of the Tour de France.
That was good, wasn't it?
Which was right up there. But do you know what I mean? Like, you sometimes don't need to watch the whole thing unfold. The riders just need to be tired so that when you do tune in, you've got this epic battle.
Well, it sounds like they don't even need to be tired, given the stage was so short this year, so I'm still very exciting in places.
Well, yeah.
What you're saying, then, is that you think the Tour might be better if there were longer stages that tired the riders out and that we just tuned in for the last half hour of each stage?
Well, possibly. Like, what's it like the Alpe d'Huez stage, right? Mm. Like, that was great. I tuned in for the last... Well, I only need to watch 35 minutes these days to watch the whole of Alpe d'Huez.
10 years ago, it would have been 3/4 of an hour.
Exactly, yeah.
Cut down on your time watching the Tour.
But maybe it would have been cooler to see everyone, like, on their knees and really, like, digging into the depths of their reserves.
I guess had they been on their knees, that record might not have been broken. I mean, that design of the stage in particular felt like it was done in a way that would allow the best riders, i.e. Pagacar, to try and break Pantani's record. Well, because it was quite easy leading up to the
That's right, Pantani did 100k more, didn't he, to get to the bottom of Alpe d'Huez.
I think it was something along those lines, yeah, so he was a lot more fatigued. Back to the question, I do think I prefer it as the high-octane event that the Tour de France is today, because most stages are ridden flat out now from start through to finish. It's quite the spectacle most days. There's nowhere near as much downtime as there used to be, riders coasting along. I think my point is that if somebody tunes into the race for the first time now, it's more likely to be quite exciting than it was if they'd randomly tuned in a few years ago.
I mean, that is a fair point. Mm. Yeah, and actually, I mean, when I think about it, for a lot of people, certainly here in the UK, the Tour de France means a 30-minute highlights package, because that's how most people were watching the race. So, to a certain extent, it's kind of irrelevant how long the stages are, except those long, boring bunch sprint days were even boring in a 30-minute highlight package. So, actually, it's good that those have gone, isn't it?
I see your point, though. Maybe we do miss out on some epic stories. like we had in the bygone era. So, for example, back in the days of self-sufficiency at the Tour de France.
Like Eugene Christophe.
That's the one, yeah. Yeah. I think that's who I'm thinking of.
He's the man who snapped his forks while riding down the Col de Tourmalet. And he had to walk with his broken bike down to a blacksmith's, where he then had to re-weld his own forks. But poor chap was slapped with a massive time penalty because someone else had operated the bellows to said forge, which qualified as outside assistance.
If memory serves me correctly, Si, that was back in 1913.
If your memory serves correct, yeah, I'm not even sure we were alive in 1913.
I don't think we were. So what you're saying is that we should go back 113 years for that type of entertainment.
Oh, absolutely. I want to see Pogacar popping into his local carbon repair shop if he's got a problem with his bike, and then we could televise that live on TV as well.
Imagine that. I mean, social media would go viral.
Oh, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I guess it would cut down on the carbon footprint of the Tour de France, because you wouldn't need team cars if you were self-sufficient again, would you?
Well, that is true. And actually, it's probably one for another day, Dan, but there is an argument, a very good one as well, for scrapping team cars altogether.
Controversial?
Well, it doesn't have to be controversial. And this isn't about making Tour de France like transcontinental. This is about slowing racing down.
Right.
Get rid of team cars. Pretty good way of doing it. Yeah. I'll save it for another time.
Okay.
Anyway, there is no doubt that what the transcontinental riders are doing is absolutely incredible. Yeah. There are not, funnily enough, loads of uploads to Strava from those people at the moment, as far as I can see. But the rider currently in third place, Jonas Verest, posted this from day four of the event. 480 kilometres... 16 and a half hours. I mean, that is fast, isn't it? 170 watt average power. Whoa. And 10,000 kilojoules.
That is nuts, yeah. Isn't it? Even if it was a standalone ride, which it wasn't, let alone in the middle of an ultra-endurance event like the Transcontinental.
Yep, so in contrast, the queen stage of this year's Tour de France, which was the penultimate stage, the energy expenditure from, well, some of the top, but not the top riders, was about half that, wasn't it? About 5,700 kilojoules. However, what the Transcon guys are doing is probably not too different to what the riders were doing in the first ever Tour de France, given that the bikes were terrible back then, the roads were terrible, and of course, when you look, the first ever stage of the first ever tour was actually 467 kilometres long.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar, is it? Although I still wouldn't watch it on TV, so if it was like that now.
No, but as I said, you don't need to watch it on TV to appreciate the beauty of it. Anyway, let us know your thoughts. Am I just harping up the wrong tree with my romantic vision of reading about the Tour de France? Do you not think it's cool, though? Like, it's just literally there, like, in the background. Not the tour, but the Transcontinental. You'd be like, I wonder what's going on. Ooh, that's what's going on. And you put it away and then you go like, oh, 4 hours later, ooh, that's what's going on.
The one thing I do miss is I remember as a kid watching those highlights and seeing the clock above the finish line as the best riders crossed the line with more than 7 hours, sometimes almost 8 hours, and then suddenly you think, oh my word, that is, I could never ever think of doing something like that.
Yeah, well, that's it. You definitely lose some of the wow factor if you're doing 160k as opposed to 240k.
Well, especially when you do 160k in a little over 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of wow factor to that, isn't it, still? Because it's that blooming fast. But do you know what I mean? It's just like, it lacks some of the epicness. Yeah, maybe we're trying to condense the Tour de France into like the 90-minute window that we watch a football match in. A bit longer if you've got a 30-minute half-time break. Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Maybe we should introduce that into the Champs-Élysées stage.
That's when the Tour de France goes over to America, isn't it?
A couple of laps of Montmartre, half-time show of Madonna.
Hydration breaks as well. Everyone gets to stop.
I mean, we're reinventing the sport completely here. ASO should come to us, side, really.
To be fair, if Shakira popped up in the middle of some Tour de France stages, you know, that would probably be okay.
Yeah. We should be patenting this, side. Could be millionaires.
Oh, yeah. Right, well, let us know your thoughts. Is the Tour de France missing a certain je ne sais quoi? Not necessarily Shakira, but perhaps ditching the the short stages now. I don't know. Is it better as it is now?
That's the simpler question.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Do you follow any of these ultra-endurance events closely yourself back at home? And are those riders the real heroes of modern cycling?
Yeah, let us know in the comments section down below.
Right, just before we move on, or actually moving on.
Moving on,
we're going to give the shop a shout-out. We've mentioned this before, we've been bowled over by the response to the designs that our designs here have come up through July to celebrate the biggest race in the world. Those designs are still available to purchase, be they t-shirts or prints as you see behind us, or even the special edition GCN Camelback water bottle.
Yeah, we should say that the t-shirts actually can be ironed, can't they?
Which is great. They can be, yes. I think I might have put an iron over mine at some point in the last year.
They scrub up pretty nicely. We're really enjoying getting feedback from you guys, whether that's reviews on the shop or also like photos and stuff. We've got to give a shout out to Brad Schuler for sending us this one. How cool is that? Look at those three prints. They look well good.
Does spruce up a workshop, doesn't it?
Does indeed.
Yeah, so if you'd like to send your photos in, either of you out and about wearing your t-shirts or your prints up in your house or your garage or your workshop somewhere, you can do so using globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader or just give a review. The reviews come straight to my inbox at the moment, so you can attach a picture to that.
Yeah, there you go.
Unless it's 5 stars, I don't read it.
Is that right?
No.
The best ironing, maybe that can win a prize next week.
Okay.
I mean, probably not. But.
Well, you're not going to win it, that's for sure.
No.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news of cycling shorts.
Always the best ones.
Yeah, and how wearing them, sadly, might cost you your job.
It's tight, technically, but that didn't fit so well.
It is, technically, yeah.
Did it? Anyway, same difference. Mehmet Fatih Çiçekli, a state governor from the Adana province in Turkey, was sacked a fortnight ago by the president, allegedly for photos of him wearing cycling kit going viral.
Yeah, so the quotes attributed to a member of government, said, "People can wear whatever they want in their private lives, but a governor cannot visit the public in tights while on duty." Çiçekli pointed out that it was sportswear and that he will keep riding his bike. And to be fair to him, he actually looks pretty blooming stylish.
He certainly does not look bad, does he?
Not at all, yeah.
He's got a nice bike there as well.
He has indeed, yeah.
Moving on. I am actually moving on.
It's a story
that we watch out for every year of interest. Just how does the winner of the Étape du Tour, which is the amateur event organised by the Tour de France, which takes place on the hardest stage of the race each year, compare to the pros? Well, this year's winner finished just 20 minutes slower than the time of Richard Carapaz, who won that stage.
That is pretty impressive, isn't it? And that's faster than a whole chunk of Tour de France peloton.
It is.
Yeah. Luca Cavallo was the man. He was riding with an average speed of, I want to say, just 31 kilometres an hour, but which, given what he rode over, is still mighty impressive. And then the winner of the women's event, was Victoria Stansfield. She finished in 6 hours, 19 minutes, just under an hour behind.
If you want to know how Ollie Bridgewood got on, though, you're going to have to watch his video from the weekend.
Yeah, and you will literally have to watch it, because you actually won't find him in the official results, because he was disqualified.
He was. Why? He didn't have a motor in his bike, did he? Yep. Nor was his canyon under the UCI weight limit.
No, it wasn't the length of his aero socks, nor did he take a wee in a water bottle.
Well, we don't actually know that. We haven't asked him that yet, have we?
Good point. We don't think he took a wee in a water bottle.
No.
Should we tell him at the end of the show?
Oh, is that the nugget?
One of two nuggets
is
now.
Is it? Crikey, yeah. Watch the end of the show to find out why Ollie was disqualified from the Étape du Tour.
Yeah, we're leaving it to the end to preserve his dignity, because we know that only 19 of you can actually endure the GCN show, which is probably the ultimate endurance test in cycling.
That probably is. Yeah, move over transcontinental riders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
viewers of the GCN show to the end. Moving on again, a PR email from Trek landed in our inboxes last week.
Amongst all the 5-star reviews for GCN.
Yeah, I still saw it, and we thought it deserved a mention.
Well, yes, we did, actually, because as you're well aware, e-bike power outputs and speed restrictions are a hot topic right now, basically the world over. And Trek have made a call to the industry to limit e-bike speed limits. Now, we should say this is aimed very much more at the mountain bike world, but Trek are limiting their mountain bikes to 20 miles per hour and what's called Class 1 e-bikes, so not throttle assisted.
I think what Trek realise is that trail access is likely to become a real issue for e-mountain bikers particularly, given the rate at which power and speed of e-mountain bikes has been increasing over the years, dramatically.
Yeah. Like way, way more than human power now, isn't it? Now, what will be interesting is to see how, or whether, in fact, that filters into other categories and genres. As we said, it is a real hot potato, and I think Well, certainly I think we welcome law enforcement trying to police the rules that are already in place.
Now, I would agree, because what we don't want is what is effectively motorbikes on all of the trails, which you pedal slightly and then get 25 miles an hour out of.
Basically, yeah.
This next story makes you think that there's some education needed for police too on this front, though. A delivery rider here in the UK had his Tern HSD confiscated and destroyed by police who thought that it was an illegal e-bike.
Yes. Now, to be clear, Tern, as a lot of you will know, are a super legit brand. The bikes abide by all of the, well, UK rules, certainly European rules, any rule you would like. But the police here in the UK put the bike on the stand and then they spun the back wheel up with pedals and they got to 47 kilometres per hour and decided, therefore, that it was illegal. Now, they completely missed the fact that the motor had cut out at 20 kilometres per hour before the top speed was hit. So they just assumed that the motor was running all the way to 47 km an hour, therefore took the bike and then destroyed it. Yes.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the rider, who actually had the bike on loan, got help from Cycling UK's Defence Fund and the police have issued an apology and refunded the rider.
Yeah, good, but they literally had to get like lawyers involved in order to get them to
surprised.
Do that. Yeah.
Not surprised. They'd say though, that the reason the bike was confiscated was not the speed, but because the rider didn't have insurance. Although that's also another mistake on their part, because that's not required in the UK either.
No, not for a legal e-bike, which it was. So as we said, perhaps some education needed, because I definitely approve of the sentiment.
Just approve.
What did I say? Improve. Yeah. Definitely improve. Definitely approve of the sentiment. Right, now, over in the US, it was a really sad story that cropped up last week that we didn't touch on, but we will now, involving the death of an up-and-coming boxer, Hannah Rapp.
She was out cycling with her boyfriend, who protested when close passed by a driver. The driver then skidded to a stop, slammed the car into reverse and crashed into them, ultimately killing Rapp.
Yeah, now police have just charged the driver with manslaughter, which I gotta say, having spent a little bit of time researching for the video we made about road violence and the law, leaves me feeling very sad and kind of angry as well. Now, we should say it's an ongoing investigation, so it's not fair to comment on the specifics, but at first glance, it does feel a little bit like one of those instances where someone has treated their car like a weapon. Yeah. And maybe it should be recognised as such.
As you say, either way, it's a tragic situation. But yes, if there was intent to harm, you'd want that to be reflected in the charges brought against the driver and defendant.
You would, yeah. Right, we want to do a little shout-out next to Jack Thurston. So you might remember him from GCN Plus's super popular slow cycling series. You can watch three of those episodes, actually, if you're a member of GCN on YouTube and you've got those members-only videos.
Yes, you can.
Jack, that sounds a bit like videos of you in your pants, doesn't it? But they're not. They're like the GCN Plus documentaries.
Yeah,
that
they're on a different website. Anyway, Jack has just published the latest and potentially greatest book in his Lost Lane series of guidebooks to riding here in the UK. This one is Scotland, and it's a hefty tome with 40 routes on road and mellow gravel also. It's absolutely mouth-watering.
It is, actually, yeah. It's a book that makes you want to take an adventure.
Do some slow cycling.
Yeah, well done, Jack, for that one. That's proper cool. Right, another shout-out, this time to Steve Williams. He is based not too far from GCN Megabase and had made it his mission to ride up a climb close to his house called Llangynadir 1,000 times, which is a feat that he accomplished last weekend.
I'm glad you had to say that name, not me, Si. I'd have stumbled on that. Anyway, that is a climb that we know well here because it's the longest climb within a fairly healthy radius of GCN HQ. 4.6k is long and 7.7% average grade.
That's like a mountain in these parts, isn't it?
It's long, yeah. And you and the other presenters, not me, Si, have done it quite a few times whilst filming over the years, I think.
Well, do you know what? I first found that climb on an Ordnance Survey map, just pre-Strava, when I was trying to find the longest climb to do efforts on. I was obsessed with 20-minute threshold efforts, and that one was the only one I could find that was you could get close.
Good job. It was an old equipment, so I'd be 15 minutes now.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, back to Steve. He wants a huge well done. But he's also been doing it to raise money for prostate cancer charities.
Yeah, properly cool, that, isn't it? All right, we'll finish Cycling Shorts with some tech news now. Shimano released some new gravel shoes.
You're all over the props today, Si.
Oh, I am. Check these out. Yeah. Whoa!
These are the new RX710s, the second tier model in the lineup. In Shimano's words, offering premium race level tech for more riders.
Yeah, so the difference between these and the top ones is just 10 grams in weight per shoe, so not very much at all. But crucially, a slightly less stiff sole on this one, which should give a little bit more comfort to people who are not stamping on the pedals with a gazillion watts and trying to go as fast as possible.
Yeah, I won't be using them then.
No, rising because you've got a bajillion watts.
Yeah. Did 5 rides last week, so.
A bajillion watts?
No, not yet, but just let me taper.
Yeah, okay, fair. You do have the same dual boa closure as the top model, the same synthetic leather upper, and very cool, it uses the same cleat system, which has now got these stabilising pontoons built in, which I don't know whether you've noticed, Dan, I feel like there's a definite step up even over the previous edition when you're using like mountain bike pedals in these shoes. It's very positive, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I have enjoyed using those new cleats because all my rides last week, and not all of them actually, 3 of them were on the gravel bike, 2 of them were on Zwift.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well done, mate.
Thanks.
How many hours total?
8 and a bit.
Whoa! I say this.
About half the amount of an average transcontinental rider in a day.
Yeah, I actually had to go out on Sunday because I'd seen that Dan had done an 80-kilometre ride on Saturday and I knew that it would bother me massively that I would only have done 6 hours and you'd done 8. Yeah. So
I'm also going on an altitude training camp in a couple of weeks.
But it's touch and go whether your bike will go with you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Should do some running, though. Hack. /bodge of the week now. You can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. Our first one this week comes in from Jesper, who says, better than grass. With 10Ks to go, I had a cut in my tyre that a plug couldn't fix. It just blew out after a short while. My tubes had 48mm valve size. My rims are 45mm, which meant my pump couldn't engage with the valve. So I did what any sane man would do. I filled my tyres with thistles and rode the last 10K home, standing up on the 10-tooth with all my weight on the handlebar, most of it. No damage to the rim. Image is the thistles post-ride and removed from the tyre.
I mean, I don't know what to say, Dan. Like, stuffing your tyres with something is a pretty old-school technique for when you run out of tubes. I mean, having a valve that's not long enough for your bling wheels is the ultimate first-world problem, isn't it? But why thistles? Like, thistles are horrible, horrible things. Presumably you've now absolutely trashed your tyre because it's full of spikes. I don't know, but that does strike me as an odd choice of things with which to stuff something else.
Yeah. I mean, I've never thought to use brambles in this country, I must admit.
No?
Partly for my my hands as much as the tyres.
Also, if you're going to run gravel tyres, that is a lot of stuffing. I tried to stuff a road tyre for a video many, many years ago. And
that was effort enough, was it?
Well, yeah, I ran out of patience after like, a couple of hours, that's for sure.
I'm going to say bodge then.
Well, yeah, I mean, if there was no damage to the rim, then that's obviously a plus. But yeah, I think that is just a generally terrible idea.
Yeah, sorry, Jesper.
Yeah, next up, we've got this one sent in by Mountain Bike Greg. How's he snuck on here?
Yeah.
Mountain bike. Garmin sealant mount, he's called it. So this is his Trek Modon SL7. Oh, that's how he's got on here. He's got a fancy road bike. Using a Garmin mount as a sealant cartridge holder tucked away for full aero effects. I like that. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
So what, is it stuck to the rear of the seat stay, Garmin head unit mount?
I don't really understand, if I'm totally honest, why there is a Garmin mount there in the first place.
No. It does look rather neat there between the seat stays, and that is going to stop the cartridge from wearing a hole in the seat tube, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or scratching it, should we say. I'm going to say hack, even if I don't quite understand what it's doing. I mean, I presume he's just used it to prevent scratches to his bike.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know how the Garmin mount is attached.
No, I haven't got a clue.
No. All right, well, right. Mountain bike Greg, before you go back to GMBN and leave us alone here on the Road Channel, write in again. Explain a little bit more why this is there in the first place.
Yeah, I feel very dumb right now, just sat here scratching my head at what on earth's going on here.
Now you know how I feel most of the time. So, next up, this from Ukis Lightmount. Ukis wrote, on episode 705, I think, someone submitted a machine taillight holder attached with zip ties, and I think it was judged to be a bodge. This inspired me to post my radar mount. I spent some minutes learning to TIG weld and made this from a few scrap pieces of pan iron. Could maybe use some touching up after its first bikepacking trip, but it has served its purpose quite wonderfully, and the radars worked flawlessly from this position. You can see the top of the Ortlieb seat pack. Ortlieb seat. I can't even say it after you told me how to say it. In the picture, no chance of fitting the radar on the seat tube.
Don't worry, Ortlieb's quite a small brand. No one will know.
Okay.
Yeah.
It looks awful.
It looks absolutely horrendous. I mean, truly one of the worst things I think I've ever seen. Oh, my God.
So that...
Bring back zip ties down is all I can say.
That's the only purpose of that horrible piece of metal bolt on the side of the seat tube, the seat stay there, is to hold up the radar.
Yeah.
I like the fact it's got the catcher thing as though it's not going to go into your spokes anyway if that drops down. I think you know what we were going to say today.
Yeah, I do think you know that.
Horrendous bodge.
Absolutely awful. And for podcast listeners, by the way, at this point, we're literally looking at a piece of rusty metal essentially like welded onto one of the seat stays with just a radar.
It just looks like it's rested on the top.
Oh, God, that is awful.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. But I'm impressed that you learned to TIG weld.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Thumbs up for that. Right, we've got Andre Pepe sent this one in. Silver cranks? Hell yeah. I wanted silver cranks on my titanium gravel bike. Is they difficult to come by or expensive? I decided to make my own. After much effort, de-anodizing and polishing cranks, I was quite pleased with the result of my SRAM Rival 1x crankset now matching my stem, handlebar and seat post. I've got to say, that does actually look quite cool. I like that.
I would agree, and I feel there aren't enough shiny silver cranksets around anymore.
No.
They were a big thing back in our day, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose that was our day, wasn't it? When did Durace go... Durace started to go a little bit like dark grey and moody, like late 2000s,
quite a long time
ago,
but certainly I remember the time when... what was that sort of stuff that you'd put on it? What it was called now? You carry on talking, so I'll look up what it was.
All right. I'm going to say hack, Andre, so well done for that one. That is the last one, unfortunately, Dan, so get Googling quickly. I will remind you all to keep sending in your hacks and bodges. We do absolutely love them. The address is, Dan, help me out.
globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
Uploader.
I haven't been able to find it, so we'll break for now. Maybe when we come back, I'll have remembered.
What is it you're actually looking for?
It was like a chrome polisher in a toothpaste style thing. Sometimes you could use wire wool if whatever you were using was wire wool proof. Anyway, I'll get back to you in a minute. It is now time for more hack /bodge of the week. Autosol is the sort of toothpaste tube of chrome polish cream.
What did you do with it? Just to make your bike look shiny?
Oh, yeah, it would bring all sort of chrome parts up a treat.
Really?
So shiny, yeah, it was great.
Is it now banned because it's like environmentally hazardous, toxic?
I think you can still get it.
It's good that you brought us back, actually, because I made a note here to give a shout out to Phil Webster. So he was in hack/bodge last week. Do you remember with his bike packing setup? Mm. And we said, that looks amazing, but I bet it squeaks and rattles really badly. Well, anyway, Phil got back in touch saying, thanks for the hack. The loudest rattles and creaks come from the original equipment, disc pads rattling in the caliper, and presumably some of the many suspension bearings in the frame and quad link. Yes, the chain guard does occasionally rub in the low gears. Small clearance tire to chain, but at my age, I'm getting a little deaf, and the battery on my hearing aid doesn't last more than a day. Oh, to be just 40-something again. So, anyway, thank you, Phil, for getting in touch. I like that. That was good. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below. We will pick a winner next week. But first of all, It's the results.
And my word, do we have a witty caption for you from underneath last week's show.
We do.
First up, this is the photo that we gave you. This is Tadej Pogačar and his teammate Isak Del Toro on the sign on podium pre-stage in the second week of the race. Our winner is Jack Herman, who put caption competition. So they knocked on my door at 5 a.m. and I said, am I under a vest?
That's good, that.
Yeah.
Very good. Right then, the photo for you to get your teeth stuck into this one.
Yes, this is a sort of long shot of a lined out group or peloton with a lovely background and then some sort of inflatable puppet on the right hand side. I will get you started.
Is that a naked puppet, Dan? It's quite a lot of butt cheek hanging out.
Yeah, I mean, that is the basis of my caption, which is when they said the Tour de France is going to be a great crack. Didn't realise it was going to be that.
That's good, mate.
That thing. Thank you very much.
Very good. I like that.
Good job we can't see the other side.
Well, I think they're wearing a loincloth. Look, they've got like a belt on, haven't they? Right, if you think you can better or even equal Dan's comedy caption, then get stuck in the comments section down below. We'll pick a winner next week.
We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, but as you know, we've picked out loads of our favourite comments from last week's video. Last week's show, we had this in from Clark McFarlane, who said, I laughed when you said we all love fresh tarmac. I do. However, I cycle with a guy who was a civil engineering lecturer, and he keeps telling me it's not tarmac, it's asphalt. If you want to know the differences in detail, he runs a 5-day course on it and gives the mini lecture while cycling every time I say the word tarmac.
I love that very much. Imagine a 5-day course on the nuances between tarmac and asphalt. Mm. Do you know who I think would like that? Ollie Bridgewood.
He'd love it.
I mean, he probably would already think that he's a fount of knowledge on the difference between tarmac and asphalt.
It would just be confirmation of his knowledge.
Basically, yeah. He'd probably sit at the back going, yeah, I know this already. Mm. I like this one from Maggie Irwin. While it's really demoralising to think of all the ways the US government is moving backwards in terms of cycling infrastructure, I was so excited to hear Somerville get a shout out. I live right across the border in Cambridge, or Camberville as they say. While Somerville is technically a small city, its proximity to Cambridge and Boston makes the commitment to safe bike lanes and dedicated bike paths hugely impactful for cycling in the whole greater Boston area. So, even while larger forces actively oppose cycling infrastructure, Somerville is a great example of how important local government and local community activism are. And that wasn't the only comment we had about Somerville as well.
That's
so, super cool. Thank you for that one, Maggie.
Mark Sargent wrote, never mind falling asleep before the Uranus nugget. It usually takes me 3 goes to get through a show. I'm not bored by it and love the content. I've been a dedicated viewer of the channel since the days of Matt Stevens and Paul Ryman's training videos. That is a long time.
That is a long time.
However, after a 12-hour night shift on a Tuesday and a quick watt bike session after work, I rarely get to hack forward slash bodge before nodding off. So this week's show must have been more absorbing than usual. I only took 1 pot of coffee during the way to get me through. Top show, chaps. Keep up the good work.
Kraken said, size attitude to hangers and cycling kit, this is clothes hangers, explains a lot about his t-shirts on the show. Yes, but I mean, but come on, who hangs up their Lycra? Actually, someone else took to the comments to say they hung up their Lycra.
Do they?
Yeah, they did. I forget what the reason was now.
Big dressing room, probably.
Possibly, yeah.
Yuduvda, do you reckon that's close?
Possibly.
Nice Iron Man helmet. This is from HJC for the time trial, of course. But how much does it weigh? You know, asking the important questions.
True that. I like that. It's quite funny.
We had a lot of people saying that they should sell that helmet in the comments last week.
And also the new GCN HJC helmets as well. So, that's cool. Underneath the Outdoors KOM hunting video, Vandal Rossi said, content like this is why I love GCN. Please give it another try. I think Tadej Pogačar has kind of ruined that one now.
He's moved the line a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, pretty much. I think, that one might be done. We'll find another climb somewhere.
Yeah, it's not been ridden quite so fast. It's 7 watts per kilo.
Yeah.
Underneath the lactate gel and supplement video that we did last week, Jake Breakbill wrote, 35 years ago, I would take anything for a game. Thank God I'm 70 now and just enjoy the ride.
I like that. The Misadventures of Little Wolf said, 5 grams of haggis every 10 minutes will give a 300% boost in power output. Pretty sure it's illegal in parts of the US, isn't it, haggis?
Is it really?
Well, I think because I seem to remember reading something about wherever the Scottish football team were based during the World Cup, they had to legalise haggis in order that they could have it.
We have vegetarian haggis on Burns Night each year.
I like vegetarian haggis. Nice, very nice. Yeah.
Pierre X, I'm so shocked that the company selling lactate gel says it can work, and the company selling gels but not gels with lactate is saying you probably shouldn't buy gels with lactate just yet. I'll do a bold prediction. When the company starts selling lactate gels, they'll recommend you buy them.
Ah, there's a little chuckle about that, yeah. And then we can't not give Ollie's Tap the Tour video a shout out, can we?
Mainly because of the way it was filmed.
Ollie was in it, but really the star of the show was the filming, the cinematography, I think. But first, Boy Flux said, riding this stage with a stomach bug just made it more authentic. Well done, Ollie. Yeah, a bit of a nod to the UAE's woes, I guess.
Jeremy Pritchard liked the bike. Well done, Ollie. That bike literally looked mint.
This was a reference to the colour of said bike, which actually I think it mint sums it up very well. And then some of the praise. Scotty Wilkins, watching this, I just wanted to go for a ride. Well done, stunning effort.
Skimboards for life. I really enjoyed the videography on this one. Jealous of that ride.
Yeah, and then Raf5604, my goodness, Ollie, another amazing video. As we said, it was mainly the people around Ollie, but anyway. I keep mentioning this, but the video crew really need an award for some incredible cinematography. Every shot and every angle deserves an award. Thank you. So that was super cool.
Yeah, no, thank you, Raf. Yeah. Not long now until you find out why Ollie was disqualified and therefore does not appear in the results this year. First up, though, what's come out this week? Well, on Friday, this is Naomi over in Finland attempting to do 100 miles.
That's right.
Quite the feat.
GCN's Almost Beginner Naomi. This is a really great video, actually. So, do make sure you check that one out. And then on Sunday, the Super Nerds are back at it again. I've actually written down what this video is about, even though I was in it. So, anyway, we've got new bikes, apparently. We've got new power meters. Can we ride a sub-19 minute, 10 mile time trial? I wrote it down and then got it wrong.
And then you've just done it.
Or, to put it another way, can we go the same speed as the Tour de France's record-breaking stage for 1/10 of the distance? Quite a tough challenge, that.
Sounds like it, yeah. Yes. I like the Ron Burgundy did there, just reading out what you'd written. Right now, it's time for the double nugget then. Should we start with Ollie or not?
Yes. Okay. So, actually, to be fair, we'll start with Ollie because it's not quite as good. He basically, when filming things, there are added hurdles, aren't there? Mm-hmm. And filming an event with 17,000 people in it is quite tricky when you're filming with a motorbike. And so Ollie had unfortunately been put in pen 17, meaning there were 16,000 people ahead of him. So he then decided that, well, this would mean that we wouldn't be able to film the video. So he took himself out of pen 17 and put himself in pen number one, which apparently is not allowed.
No.
Not
DQ'd.
Yes, massively DQ'd. So Ollie basically cheated in the etap. But
a bit arrogant to think he was going to be passing those 17,000 people.
Yeah. And then the real nugget. So for those of you that have seen it, over on the Global Triathlon Network, Dan and I decided that we were up to the task of beating them at their own game, triathlon. Now, it sounds quite arrogant on our part, really, doesn't it? But we had a valid reason for thinking that we'd be able to do that.
Yeah, because we think we're better than we are.
Basically, yes. Unfortunately, Connor Dunn, who was an integral part of our plans, was unable to do it because he was in Finland. So Connor was a childhood swimming prodigy and a record breaker at Chesham Swimming Club for the under-12s. And so we factored in our entire race strategy around Connor being able to swim almost as fast as Heather, GTN's presenter. Anyway, our stand-in Tom did an amazing job, but Connor went out and actually did a 1500 metre open water swim just to see how he would fare in the sea without a swimming hat on. As he explained to us, giving away water watts. Anyway, he did a pretty decent time for his first swim in a long time. He did 28 minutes.
That's pretty good, that, isn't it?
Which means we would only have been beaten by, what, 4 minutes?
Well, I don't know, because I would have gone quicker on the run.
I would have gone quicker, thinking that I could have caught James.
I think.
I mean, I think probably. And if Connor had done maybe another little practice.
Yeah, he'd have gone quicker as well.
Because the sea's definitely slower.
We'd have watched them. If Connor had done the swim, hopefully Tom's not watching this. The guy did do a good job for us.
Tom did a great job in the swim. He was absolutely brilliant and a great, great part of the team.
But it could have been different.
It would have been different, wouldn't it?
In a rematch.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you want to go for triathlon again then?
Not really.
No. No rematch.
No. Right, should we leave it there?
Yeah.
Thanks for watching. See you next week.